Now, this is Channel One Over. This is Channel One Over, and the visit on Saturday morning, the 16th of May, 1970. We wanted to get Phil to talk some more about the tape yesterday, and the tape was bad with that whistle in it. But the whole attitude this morning was different. It's the attitude, you see, that lift, and it just can't be recaptured. Channel One Over, Channel One Over. Saturday morning, the 16th of May, 1970.
I had one horse one time that they couldn't shoe him at a blacksmith shop. They couldn't shoe him there.
Oh?
No, if you carried their horse there, why, he just had a fit. He just, they couldn't do nothing with him. He'd been mistreated there, but he could come to the house, and we had a portable forge, and we'd take it to the house, have it there, bring it up there, and the man would fix the shoe, which I seen the way he fixed the shoe before he put it on the horse. Once in a great while, the shoe will fit the horse, but that is mighty seldom.
Mm-hmm.
You have to fix the shoe where it fits the horse and leave just a little edge sticking out around it so you can smooth it, and then you've got a good job. But when you pick up that shoe and put it down here, and you've got to cut off a whole lot of hoof on this side or this side to make the shoe fit, you know, make the horse's foot fit the shoe, you sure ain't doing nothing. You'd be a whole lot better off without shoes.
I've not seen any of that done. I haven't seen any shoeing at all.
Well, I never would shoe my horse, but when I start to drive those nails, it just got all over me that I was so afraid that I wouldn't drive one in the quick of the horse's foot. I have seen people do that, but you put the nail down on the foot and you bend that nail a little bit, whatever, how far you want it, and drive it, and it comes out, you know. I guess maybe that I could do it, but I was always afraid to do it. I'd never done it, and I was always afraid to do it.
But you didn't leave your horse with the horseshoe?
No, sir, no, sir. I sat right there and seen him put the shoes on my horse.
Mm-hmm.
And if he started to put one on there that wasn't straight, anything like that, or the shoe didn't fit the horse's foot, I told him right then, I said, open, close that shoe to make it fit that horse's foot. I don't want that. And I always liked most of people like a high heel on a horse's shoe, but I don't. I'd have him to turn that back, and it would raise it just the thickness of the shoe. Turn enough of it back, you know, to make that heel not turn it where it's straight up like that, where most of them use it. That peg ain't no good as far as I have seen. But that heel where you pull it back and make it just raise that much, you know, the thickness of the shoe. Why, I like that much heel on a shoe, but when it comes to these high heels, I didn't like it. And I always thought that cruelest thing that anybody ever did to a horse was put on these 3, 4, 5 pound shoes, you know, to make them pick
lift the feet.
I always thought that was the most cruelest thing I ever seen.
You just ought to know a little bit something about what the horse trimming is supposed to be, or shoeing, or anything. I notice, I guess anybody does better when they know you sort of watch it.
Mister, how'd you, I was interested, the Fay Wonders, that's what she was interested in, kind of how Mr. Howard appeared to you.
Oh, he appeared good. He did. He was mighty fast, but he said he'd wasn't feeling so good, and he was mighty slow doing what he done. But I thought he was mighty fast, and he was plenty fast to wait on my horse because you know, a doctor in Atlanta, Dr. Goldsmith in Atlanta, told me one time, he said, Pat said, if you take this good a care of yourself as you take care of your horse, says you'd be all right. But says you don't take very good care of yourself. But says I wouldn't mind being your horse, and I sure did love my horse. And I never know very much about my daddy's people, but he had his young sister. There was two of them. One of them was postmaster at Roberta, Georgia. Might near her lifetime, I think she taught school one, 2 years, and then she was postmistress that until she died. I never seen her. But her other sister had 5 children, 2 girls, and 3 boys. I seen the boys, to my sorrow, but I never seen the girls. They were my first cousins. And the youngest one of those boys married in a pretty wealthy family. Really, I don't think it was anything to him to begin with. I didn't know much about him, but I don't think it was. But anyway, he married in a pretty wealthy family, and his daddy put him up in business, a wholesale grocery place. And when he moved in, put up that place, my daddy was around him a whole lot, and they all, but I never was around him either. Daddy asked me one day about buying feed from him, that probably I could get it a whole lot cheaper. And I did buy some feed, and so I drove up there one day, and he asked me, he says, how about carrying me out to the edge of town? Said he, somebody out there you want to see? And said, how about carrying me out there? Said, you in a hurry? I told him no. And he come out there and the buggy that I had that horse hitched to only weighed 95 pounds. And I give $195 for it. You get an ordinary buggy for anywhere from $6 to $75. And he came out there and got in. I went on up there and the pony just trotted along, you know. And coming on back, he says, is this here the horse that people's talking about is so fast? I told him I didn't know about that he'd been timed on the track, pacing, and I says he can make it 212. I says it. I think that's about his record. I didn't brag on him or anything. He said, well, he certainly is a pretty thing. And I just pulled up my line and said, boy, he's hit. And he started after my daddy. It was a kind of fad in that place that about racehorses. People had gone crazy about them. Well, I bought this here horse off of the track at Birmingham, Alabama, and he was spoiled. He was bad spoiled. And an old nigga that worked for me tamed the horse, and he was nothing but a pet. Follow you anywhere. And I did think a lot of that horse. So I don't know how come him and my daddy ever get me to let him carry him to out there on the racetrack. But I told him, I said, I'll let you carry him out there if you won't drive him, if you won't let anybody drive him but old man Anderson that stays out there. I says he can drive him, but I says nobody else. Well, that was right, but him and my daddy both got about drunk, and they went up there and hitched up the horse, and Frank Stemmings hit him with a whip, and he sprained his front ankle. Oh, I never been as mad in my life. And you
just don't hit a horse like that.
Well, not him, because he didn't even allow a whip to be in the buggy.
Yeah.
No, sir, you could put a whip in the buggy and it just run him crazy. He just didn't have it. You just didn't have it to do.
Yeah.
Because he gave you everything you... he's got by talking.
Just speaking to him.
Yeah. Oh, he was a beauty.
Yeah.
And when I went down there by that to see my horse, and old man Anderson told me that he was right, and says maybe that if you send him up north where it's snow and ice and all like that, and leave him in that for a couple of years, says it might get it out, but says there's no certainty in it. And so he told my daddy, he knowed I was mad about it. And he told my daddy I'd come down there, he'd pay me for my horse. And I walked in his office. He said, well, says, I'm sorry what happened to the horse, and says, I want to pay you for him. He said, what do you want for him? I told him $1,000. And he said, you mean to say you want $1,000? I said, man, that wouldn't have touched the horse. I said, I wouldn't have taken $5,000 for him. And I said, I'm letting you down easy. And I says, I expect you better give me a check before I change my mind and kill you. And so he give me a check for it. Daddy, he come out there where I was, and he told me, didn't you think you'd done Frank a little bit bad? I said, get the hell away from him. I said, you my daddy, and I said, I don't want to have to say nothing, do nothing to you, but I said, it wouldn't take very much for me to beat hell out of you and him, too. And so that end of my horse, and I never did care so much about another horse. See, I was staying with Mr. Rutland when I bought the horse. I give $375 for the horse and shipped him by express from Birmingham to Sylvester, Georgia. And I think it was $180 some odd. And you couldn't, the horse was just all to pieces, you know, and all. Mostly had to keep him blindfolded. And if another horse or anything started by him, why, he just had a fit. He just couldn't stand it. He was bad sport. I come in to buy him. And old Anderson Wilcox, an old nigger that come up my room one I thought it was one of my own niggers, and Miss Maggie told me, says, Phil says there's a nigger out here wants to see you. I said, just tell him come on up here in my room. I was upstairs. He come on up there, and I think it was Christmas Eve day, and said he'd been working over there at some mill or another, and got paid off, and he lost it in a crap game, or somebody stole his money. And he lived over on Okmulga River, close to Jacksonville, Georgia. I don't know where you ever heard tell of it.
Not Jacksonville.
It was the name of it. There's no post office there, nothing. It's just one store just across the river, and they called it Jacksonville, Georgia. And that's where the nigga come from, and he wanted to borrow $10 and go home, and he come back and go to work for me. Well, he certainly knowed how to handle mules, horses, or anything. And he was the quietest. You know, most people start hollering at a mule or a horse, you know, and all like that. But he never did do that. Just quiet and easy. He was mighty good. And when I bought this horse, I had eyed it that Anderson could tame him for me, and so I gave him a week off, and then he in the morning, afternoon, he'd go up and play with his baby. He said he'd play with him, and got him where he'd follow him around and all like that, and he told me, he said, I don't think he'd get any trouble, said, we're going to hitch him up. Now, I come through Atlanta and bought that buggy. And so we hitched him up, and he was all right. But if we seen anybody come and start with, we'd turn him around or turn him out of the road or somewhere like that. But he got away, it didn't make no difference with him. And the only way you could drive him was to talk to him.
Yeah.
You could talk to him. He trod most of the time, but his fastest gait was pacing.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't like for him to pace, you know, just the road gait.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd fuss at him and make him do anything I wanted him to do. But when you pulled up that line and hit that pace, and any horse can make it in 2:12, it's pretty fast when it, without breaking or anything like that.
Well, Fan, you had, you know, we were talking about doctrine over here. Yeah, that is on account of these shots. You just started out doctoring animals.
Well, I had a good deal of, my daddy always had a lot of mules, you know, and horses and all like that, but and I had to mess with them a whole lot, but
and then Mr. Rutland had
he had a lot of them.
Now what was that when you was talking about yesterday? I thought that was right interesting. This was a big mule that swelled up.
Swelled up, and I stuck a hole in my knife and put a nigger pipe stem in it.
Bill, I can't believe that again. Tell me that.
He was just swelled up. And
yeah,
down.
He had colic.
He had colic,
yeah. And you know they swell up. Oh, and the boy, they just like a drum. And he's laying down, and it's pretty painful because you had the stomach ache too. And that's about the size of it, but just full of gas. And Doc Sutton said, "One, I had an acute meal." And I stuck a knife in him and took that nigger's pipe stem and stuck in there.
Why'd you have to do that?
It would close up some way or another. It wouldn't stay open, just the hole. And I stuck the pipe stem in there and gas come out. I stuck a match to it and made it put as blue as flame.
Now who was that nigga that was, is that the same one?
Old Anderson Wilcox, yeah.
Now he had, you depended on him right smart.
Oh yeah, yes sir. He stayed with me till I went in service. And when I went in service, he went back home.
You drive up and he knew you was coming?
Oh no, that was the old nigga that stayed at the barn. That was the nigga away from Mr. Rutland, old John Sutton. Old ham-legged nigga. And they don't do it what time of night it was. Come while he hear me, come out there and take out my horse.
Oh, that's another one. That was Mr. Rutland.
That was Mr. Rutland, nigga. And you know, 52 years after I left there, last year I went back there. I moved up in there. I bought a little old shingle mill and started business for myself. That was getting along pretty good. And early in the spring, he came up there. And he wanted me to shut that thing down and come back home and stay with him till he made a crop. And I told him that I wasn't going. And he thought that by saying that, I got me 2 mules, I had a lot when I left there to hold my logs with. I got me 2 mules. And to say those mules was his, you know. And a mule sold for about $300 then, and that I owed him $600 for them mules. I told him, I said, Joe, I says, $6,000 would begin what I owe you. But I said, I'll meet you in town in the morning. And I says, I'll give you that $600. Well, he was pretty surprised because I hadn't been in business very long. And he was surprised that I had $600 to get $600 because $600 in them days was a whole lot of money.
Well, Phil, you see, you know how to treat the animals, and Mabel knows how to treat the patients. Now, does she know anything about handling animals, treating them?
Not much, no.
Well, what was she telling me this morning? I've forgotten. When is she telling me? Oh, yes, about that cow.
Yeah. They had a horse, and Mabel sold a lot of that horse. It was just a pony was raised there, but he was very high-spirited. His father was a mighty high-priced stallion. And they swapped for him because this old man was had too much life for him, you know, and scared of him. And Mabel sold a lot of that horse, and he had ate a watermelons they throw over there to the hogs, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the horse had ate a whole lot of them watermelon seeds, you know, and kind of got to collie. And she was out there trying to do something for him and all, didn't know what to do. And she said that she went in there and got a gallon jug of spirit turpentine and up there on his back. She got up there and rubbed his back. Well, the horse got to burn him. He went out there and went to running and kicking and all like that. And of course, that the mare seed and all got out of him, and all the hair come off the horse's back. And when Daddy come home, she told her, said, "Now let me tell you, said you get that hair back on that horse." And said she got salt fried meat grease, and said she greased that there horse's back every day. Said it wasn't long before the hair was back on him. But I've laughed at her about that a whole lot of times.
That was one of her learning pieces.
Yeah, she told a lot of that horse, and she wanted to do something for him.
Well,
first, she thought maybe it was his kidneys. And sometime you take water, you know, and pour it in a port, and they said sometimes it makes a horse's kidneys age.
Mm-hmm.
And she tried that, and that didn't do no good. But when she put that turpentine up there and rubbed his back with that and got him so hot, and he went to running and kicking, why, he got shed of them watermelon seed right quick. And that part, it was all right, but he said there's a place up there, bigger, two hands or bigger, on his back, said it was skin, said it didn't have a bit of hair on it.
Well, if you was treating the horse now for the colic, you wouldn't necessarily stick your knife in him.
Oh, no.
What did Wilcox think?
Oh, yeah, he said he'd never seen that before. And he said, "Mr. Phil, ain't you afraid you're going to kill that mule?" I don't care. He's suffering, and get that air on him, and she'll give him ease. And that's all I thought about, was just easing the horse. The mule. There's a great big, big bay mule. I imagine that mule would have weighed 1,300 pounds, maybe more. You're a big mule.
Now you brought in the vet on that too.
Yeah. Miss Maggie, she called a vet. When I got out there, the mule was getting along pretty good. And, of course, he gave him a shot and went on back. And he told me, he said, Phil, said, one of you had to kill that mule. I told him, I said, yeah, I guess that's so.
Well, now,
but he did.
Which vet was it that told you about it was a treatment that killed a lot of the mules?
That was him, Dr. Sutton.
Dr. Sutton.
Yeah, Dr. Sutton, he told me one day, I tell him, I said, I'm getting tired, you know, a mule get sick against, get take a colic, Joe would fix up a bottle of medicine, mostly croton oil, and give the mule, drench him with it. And he told me one day, he said, Phil, said the mules is killed by the treatment that they are with the disease. And I quit giving it to him.
Oh. How would you get it down?
Oh, throw the head up and put the bottle in the corner.
In the corner of the mouth?
Yeah.
It looks like that'd be a safe way of doing it.
Well, it is, but he says that a lot of times that you put that drench, that stuff, and gets in the lungs. Now, that's what he told me, whether it's right or not, I don't know.
Well, look, when the vet came out here one time, and this little bay horse had the colic, he gave it to us through the nose, put a tube right down to her stomach, you see, so it didn't get in her, and she didn't mind.
Well, I guess that is one safe way to give it. You put that tube on down in the stomach.
All the way.
Yeah.
But now that's what he told me. I've drenched them, anyone. I've drenched mine and all like that. But I never.
Well, now that's one of Mabel's favorite remedies, is that drenching.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
anything wrong with calf, she gives him a Coke.
Oh, she go out there and pour Coke down him. And you know, she never has lost but one or two calves.
Yeah.
And she's brought them out when they give them to them. They couldn't stand up, you know, and all like that. And she'd get her some syrup and some Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd start to, wasn't long before he'd be up and get on all right. And when that fellow Moss left over, that was dead too, for we know that he left them two little calves down there, you know. And we went down there, and the little heifer was down, couldn't stand up. And we went down here and got some of this boxed powdered milk and some cocoa. And we went to doctor the cow. And that little thing there was, and that damn Mary, she came over there when I bought them other two from Uncle Gil. Started off, she just had to have one of them. All right, you can have one. Well, she didn't have a lot of trouble getting that one. And she had to have the other one. I said, oh, you can have it. And then she'd come over there and she'd rub that little old cave, a little old runt, wasn't worth nothing. And I kept the thing for, 4 or 5 months. And it was fat and it was pretty, but it wasn't no size. Little old Jersey cave. And she told me, said, "Papa, I want that calf." I said, "Honey, that thing ain't no good." "Yes, yeah, she wants it." I got Jack Williams to cat over there for her. Well, she brought a calf. Don't know where she got the calf, but it was a whole lot too early, but it was a red calf. Way down there in this pasture. She goes down there and totes that thing to the house. And the little old calf had that biggest bag, you know, and all. And her grandmama told her, said, "Honey," says, "that calf's got a, that old cow's got a mighty big bag." Said, "I don't think that calf's going to take care of that little cow." She went and got another calf, and you know that little old cow raised two of the prettiest calves there was over there. Now that's right. And she sold those calves, and she got 46 cents a pound for one and 52 cents a pound for the other one.
She gonna take after Mabel.
I never heard it.
Gosh, she has been that way ever since she was about 3 years old. Whenever she come over there, right in the pasture she went. She had to go see the cows. Well, that damn bull I had over there was mighty tame and all like that. But I was scared for her to go out there with him. I didn't know where he might hurt her.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. And she just started walking. And she'd go just as far as she could. And about 3 years old, looking for the cows and going I don't know where she's going. And some of the times I just followed her. And finally start over there in the woods, and I think maybe she get on a rattlesnake or something other and get her and bring her on back to the house. But she's always been that way about them cows, you know. Her grandmama,
yeah,
and her great-grandmama just loves cows and calves better than anything, and she just like them.
Now that's something I never heard of before, but one time. What you was telling about Grandma Rollins feeding them cows?
Yes, sir.
I haven't heard.
You know, she came over to the house and told Mabel, or told her somewhere, that she wanted a milk cow, that she didn't have a milk cow.
Yeah.
And Mabel told her to come over to the house that she could have either one she had. And she come over there and got a kind of a cream-colored jersey heifer, worth putting. And I told her, I said, "Grandma, I'll bring you the cow over." And she give Mabel a great big cow that was, let me see, what, Shorthorn.
Oh.
And Hoofer.
Mm-hmm.
She was a beautiful cow. And she gave Mabel that one for her cow. And I carried the cow over there one afternoon. And Grandma was out there and she had buckets and boxes and pans. Oh, now for about 40 cows.
Mm.
And she was feeding them. Everyone was in his own pan, bucket, or whatever she's feeding them in. I said, "Grandma," I says, "when this here cow eats up her feed," I says, "won't she go over there and take the other cow's feed?" She said, "Uh-uh." I said, "They won't do that." I says, "I declare mine will." I said, "I can put it in the trough," and I said, "one of them or start at one end and knock them out that way. And I said, if they go over here, I said, he knocked them out that way. And I said, it don't take but one or two trips down the trough for one or two's got it all and the rest of them ain't got none. She said, no, said, they'll eat up what I give them, and said, then they'll go ahead and say, you won't bother them, mom.
Well, now, how did she ever get into that, find out about that thing?
Well, she raised them things, you know, and that's the way she started off with them. And I imagine if one of them cows went over to another and she picked up a stick and frammed them across the horn or something, they loomed onto doing it. Now, Mabel had one of those big spotted cows.
Yeah.
That she would turn her in the barn and she would go stand at her trough and they would move.
Oh.
Till Mabel fed all the rest of them. And then she could feed her.
Is that right?
Now, that's right. I told her, I says, you getting like Grandma a whole lot.
What was that animal? Let me see. This one, vet said you might as well put that in out of his misery. And you, what was it, Faye? Mr. Fell was telling. And he gave him a little something and brought him to. That must have been a cow. What was that?
Now, I remember.
What were we talking about there? That was a, yeah.
That was a cow. The cow's about to die. But I don't.
Down. Cow was down.
Oh.
You know, a cow is hard to treat by feeding.
It's mighty hard. And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of medicine to put in cow's eye for pink eye.
Mm-hmm.
But not get it in there.
Oh, they can close it that fast.
And did you ever take your hands and try to open one of the eyes? Now, that's one of the terriblest yellow bridges you ever tried.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might take the shit stuff that you blow in the eye and catch them looking at something else and not paying much attention to you.
Mm-hmm.
And get up, put it close, and blow it in his eye.
How far back did you know the Rollisons, Phil, when you first come to this country?
Oh, when I first moved to Florida.
1940?
39.
Yeah.
The old man, Rollison, first time I ever knew him, he come over there with Mr. Denton. I brought some spotted Poland China hogs down here. And these things that got up like that, you know, 500, 600, 700 pounds. And he wanted one of the males, and I told him and Denton, I said, tell him to come over there. I said, I'll let him have one of them. And the old man said he didn't know where he was able to buy one of them or not. I told him I didn't want for the microphone. And I said it's hard luck to give anybody a pig. But I said, you can have him for a nickel. And he come over there and got the pig, and he didn't have a nickel, he had to give me a dime. And I give old man Boyd one.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, and I give Franklin one, and old man Rollison, and I sent two of them to Albany to Irene. She carried them to Georgia, and I sent my nephew two up in Georgia. I never did sell one of them. Never did sell one of them. I give them away, but I never did sell one.
Well, you know, they always say on the country, you just have to have something to give people when they come to see you. You just don't want them to come to see you and then let them go home empty-handed.
Well, I don't know. I got a lot of kick out of messing with their hogs and all like that, but I didn't know nothing about it. And there was a boy up in Georgia that had this guild, and he was going to school, and he needed the money.
Uh-huh.
And that's how come me with the guild.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I ever had very much sense.
Let me tell you, pal,
about the maddest I have been in. Of course, I couldn't say nothing, but and everything turned out all right without me getting in any trouble or anything. But I was over here at Williston, doctor's office over there, and a woman came in there with a little girl, looked to be about 2 years old. And she had a rag in her hand, a hole in it to keep the blood from, keep it from bleeding. And she was holding it, waiting for the doctor. And then when this mother went up to the window and told her she a girl. Now, I was sitting in a chair right beside the window. And she told the girl that unless she paid the $20 that she already owed, that they couldn't do anything for the baby. Or if that woman had spit in my face, it would have made me no matter. And my checkbook was in Mabel's pocketbook, and I went to get her, and while I was going to get her to get my checkbook to write this woman a check for that $20 bill she had in there and tell her to take that baby next in the place of me, this woman's mother came in, and she told the girl at the window that she couldn't pay the $20 bill, but she would pay for the fixing the baby's hand. And of course, before I could get fixed, I reckon raised a lot of sand. I don't know if it could have mounted to that. It all come out all right. But you know, I was going up and tell that damn woman. I said, I want this woman's bill. I said, Mark, and Mark had paid. And I'm going to give a check for that bill.
And, bill?
But okay. that Dr. Daly, you know, him and my son were raced together. They were big buddies and all like that. But I don't know. I might have had that there check and that bill and that baby's picture and all on the front dang page of Tampa Tribune. I don't know
Tampa Tribune. And pick it up.
But you know that I just couldn't take.
Mm-hmm. Well, after you got down here, the Rollison's up there, now he had the reputation of being a nice old fella. And he had these boys. Now I forget the names, but two of them was in the Navy. And they come back after the war, and they wasn't too interested in making a living. And they seen for fish, and that was against the law. And they went out there and shot alligators. That was, the law didn't protect them then, but it was, at least it was sort of shady demons. And they moonshine
liquor.
And they say, I've heard, you know, just one or two people like you who happen to know about them say that was respectable liquor that they made over there.
I don't know. One of them had lived on there, over on a canal somewhere. I don't know just exactly where. But his wife shot him.
Yeah.
And old man Denton got Paul. You know, he was in the medical department in the Navy for 7 years. And he got Paul to go over there with him. And Paul told Mr. Denton says, they're not any use of you having to pay all this bill, this your man getting shot and all like that. Says, Cam, Lake City and turn him over to the government hospital. And so Paul knows how to get him in there now.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of times you go in, sometimes it's 6 months before you get in there. But me and Paul carried Sugar Man Boyd over there one time. He was in jail. And Paul went up there and told the judge that this boy was crippled and he needed something done for him. And if he would turn him loose, that he would come to Lake City and put him in the hospital over there and have something done for his knee. And I went with him. And there's a great big old Jew doctor. Came out there and he told Paul, said, we ain't got no room, says, we'll let you know when we got a place for him. I don't know just what that was Paul said to him. I don't know what he said to him, but I know one thing. It changed that fella's mind. And not only that, he had another doctor and a nurse to come out there, and they carried him in a room and put him to bed right quick. And I asked Paul, I said, what'd you tell that man? He said, I don't know. I don't know what I told him. But he told him something. Now I'm going to tell him.
What had happened? Is something he picked up from you that he told him?
I don't know what he told him.
I wish I knew, and I wish Paul were around.
What happened to Sugar Man?
Oh, he stayed up there a week or two and sent him home.
What was he? He got into trouble?
Yes, he got drunk and beating up his wife and all, and I think old Amy Walker called him, and they come up and invited me to live in that little house back of our house, you know. And they come up there and got him.
Sugar Man?
Uh-huh.
Was living up there back of yours?
Yeah. He's still back there. Oh, I reckon he lived there nearly a year.
Well, that's the reason you had him out there sending out your lumber, your timber.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, he was at home then, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. So they put him in jail, and they sent for his daddy, and the daddy wouldn't do nothing for him. And he sent after me, and I told Paul, he said, daddy said, I'll try, says, I think I can fix it. And he would have been told the judge if he'd let him have him, that he would carry him to the hospital. You know, he got wounded in that Belgian Bulls, and got his knee hurt, and it put it bad. And it was giving him trouble, but it wasn't giving as much trouble as that case against him.
Hey, this is longer than I was you needed there. You just pleasuring yourself now. You just saying,
I know it. I just wanted to see this. I just didn't know. I thought Bell knew more about that horse than.
But Mr. Hollis acts like a. You notice the way he picks up them feet. He don't pick them up hardly. The horse sort of picks them up for him.
Yeah, they have got something of that. The way that they go at him, the horse knows and pick it up, and he didn't have much trouble.
Well, that Molly is terrible about one of her back legs, as I told you.
Yeah, or she prances.
Mm-hmm. Most times you can't pick it up.
Well, that frog of that foot, if it had been mine, I don't say that it's right or wrong.
Yeah, well, this is what I thought.
Because I don't know. Uh-huh. But if it looks like to me that after he trimmed that foot, that frog is too flat on the ground.
Mm-hmm. I looked it to me,
and
too.
And whenever you start a mule, horse, anything, walking on that frog, it's not so good, because that's not supposed to be walked on. The hoof is supposed to be walked on, and the frog taken care of, you know, an arrow-looking place.
Well, you know, you don't want to act as if you know more than the person you get to come out to work on it, but it won't hurt to just ask a little simple question, would it?
No, and, honey, don't pay too much attention to what I say. What I thought about it, that's all. Now, whether it's wrong or not, I don't know.
That's what I thought.
I know if it'd been my horse and they was going to put no shoes on him, that I would ask them by trimming the front part of that frog just a little bit more.
You know, he said out here one time he had lost a good number of customers by knowing too much. When they start to tell him what to do, you see, he just got to go ahead and do it like they say.
I run up some of them with my horse too, but I tell them right damn quick. I says, now you do it like I want to, or you let alone, I'll get it done.
Wow.
Of course, they do it like I want to, and some of them tell me, say, well, it's all wrong. I says, it's my horse. All like that.
Well, now, I don't know. I haven't tested him. But I think he's got to the point here now where he'll do it the way the customer wants him to do it.
Well,
and he won't appear to know too much. He's English, you know. And his manner might not please some of these
pretty hard-headed people.
Crackers.
Yeah, they're pretty hard-headed people.
Yeah.
Well, I do thank you for coming over, because I just got to thinking about it, and I looked
Did I ever tell you an English girl kicked those two big teeth out one time?
No.
Yeah.
An English girl.
Mm-hmm. You know, during the First World War, they were English trained and United States government trained and French trained, all run on the same road.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were stationed out about 2.5 miles from town. There's a big shop out there where they used to put locomotives up, and we was out there, stationed out there right close to it.
I see.
And we used to go to town, you know, and if a freight train come through or something, we just catch us up a car and go on up, and they had little seats on top of the trains for the brakeman, you know, and they were on the English trains, they were good brakeman. And I didn't know nobody was up on that car at all, and I wouldn't went up there, but just as I stuck my head over the top of that car, boy, right in the mouth, she kicked me. And she stuck to teeth. I finally, one of them was hanging, I reached in and got it and throwed it out and was spitting the blood out of my mouth. And I caught her by the leg, just above the ankle. I caught her and I went on up there. And after I got up there and talked to her, and she gave me a rag to wipe the blood out of my mouth and all like that. And, you know, I kind of felt sorry for her. And my idea was to go up there and throw off that darn train, but I had a different idea to that. But one terrible thing happened to me over there was the first prisoners that they sent back to Germany after the war was
See that fella, he's just investigating out there now, Phil. He's just looking around. He's already got it. He's already full of sewage, you see.
Uh-huh. Prisoners that was wounded or something and had to be operated on or something like that. And they would send them back if they wanted to go, or they would take care of themselves, but most of them wanted to go back. And we was went back, carried some of them, was coming back. And you see over there, we wasn't allowed to even ride second class passengers. We had to go third class passengers. We got on first class train. Of course, we didn't come free that French at all. And of course, them coaches, you know, were just a compartment with a door, you know, that went on the outside. You didn't go all over the train, just that compartment.
That's right.
And we stopped at a place there, and old lady and her daughter got on the train, and so all of us, when she got on there, we got up, and she sat down, and the girl sat down, and I thought the way they acted.